Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope you stay glued to our website, kptz.org. Our website's much more than a way just to listen to today's show. For example, you can find the biographies of all of our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town. And you can even sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as a podcast. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are all those people eating lunch at the hospital every day? Of course, some of them are staff and some are related to patients there, but there's a lunch crowd hungry for Chef Aaron Stark's creations. The other day, the menu featured beef stroganoff and fresh broccoli, all for $7. Such a deal. Meanwhile, that part of town is becoming quite the traffic hazard. People say the corner of Sheridan 19th is particularly dangerous. Who was the woman who sailed through the stop sign the other day? My friend's 3-year-old son is still troubled mightily by Grandma's car getting crashed. Oh well. Jefferson County is full of all sorts of fascinating characters. This show, Our Town, tries to profile some of the singular personalities who live here, but the show's only half an hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So it's a synopsis. We try to get our guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Bill Kraut, who, together with his wife, Elena Lovato Kraut, owns Hadlock Building Supply. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you.
Well, I always start off the show by trying to find out a bit about people's background. So tell me, are you a local boy born and bred in Jefferson County?
No, actually, I come from Indiana, down in the southern part, in a little town called Vincennes.
Aha. And did you go to high school there?
I did.
The kids all form opinions about other kids. What do you think they thought of you?
I don't know that I would necessarily classify myself as one, but I'm sure that most of them would probably agree that I was one of the nerds.
Oh, well. And so what did you do right out of high school?
I joined the Navy. Actually, I joined before I finished high school. I joined at 17.
Wow. I bet your parents had to sign to get you in.
She did. Yeah, my mom did.
Well, that was pretty adventurous. Why did you decide at such a young age to go in the Navy? What intrigued you about it?
Actually, that's a funny story. In high school, they told us that if we took the ASVAB, which is the test to enter the military, that you would get the rest of the day off. And, you know, being a nerd, I didn't mind tests. So I took the test, sailed through that, and I got the rest of the day off. Obviously, a few days later, recruiters were calling and it just seemed like an adventure.
And did you have a choice of what you might do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what did you pick?
I wanted to be a nuclear technician. And then through the course of events, I ended up doing something a little different, but still on submarines.
On submarines.
That was a volunteer thing to do. And one of the jokes is that for those of us that go into submarine service, they give you a psyche eval before you can join. And I'm convinced that you have to fail that test to be admitted.
Yeah. Well, how many people were on the submarine with you?
Give or take about 100 people. We were on a fast attack submarine, which is a little different than the ones here in Bremerton. Mm-hmm. So they're about half the size of the subs here. Yeah, we joked around that the boomer sub, the ballistic missile subs, were floating hotels.
Okay, well, 100 people. Wow. So how long were some of your deployments?
Most of them, the Western Pacific deployments lasted around 6 months. That was away from your home port. And then there are various times during the deployment where you would go to a port city. And for us, the longest that I was ever underwater continuously was 67 days.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, now I want to ask you sort of a delicate question here. It might get sort of stinky down there after a few days. Is that true?
Well, the funny thing about that is there's a chemical that they use to scrub the carbon dioxide from the air. It's called amine, and it's a very strong smelling chemical. And aside from that, the air is recirculated. So generally speaking, after a day or so, you have no sense of smell.
Yeah. So yeah, it wouldn't
it all
matter.
Just blends
it,
in.
You know, if someone new came in, I've got a feeling they'd be knocked over, right?
Yeah. It's funny, too. I have paperwork from when I was on my boat, and this is easily 25 years ago, and you can still there's still that scent of that amine on the paperwork. That's how strong the chemical smell is.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, now, the other day when we were talking, you told me something about showering on top of your food. I mean, explain what that is.
So when you leave on a long deployment, there's only so much room. So what the subs do is they use the number 10 cans, the really big canned goods. They line those through the walkways and put plywood on top. And then in the showers, they fill the showers with things like onions and the perishable things that not to be refrigerated. So the saying is we had to eat our way to a shower.
That's amazing. Well, base is pretty tight there. I guess you don't have elaborate wardrobes or anything.
No. You have we called them racks, and they were basically just a little bit bigger than the space you would need to sleep.
Wow.
And then we also, there's the term hot racking, and that's where you shared your bed with someone, not obviously at the same time.
Right.
But
one guy would be on shift,
right,
and the other would be,
yep,
in the bunk. And yeah, I think that that happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So how long were you in the Navy on submarines?
Well, I was on my boat for 3 years. I was in the Navy for 4. I spent about the first 9 months in training.
Right. There was a beautiful image you told me about going into Pearl Harbor.
Oh, actually, that was leaving Pearl Harbor.
So
when I first got to my boat, she was still on deployment. And they had a stop in Hawaii right before they came back to San Diego, the home port. So I flew to Hawaii and I rode the ship back, which was about a week. The first time that we came to the surface after leaving Pearl Harbor, I got to go up and gosh, the sun was shining. Everything was beautiful. And dolphins were jumping over the bow of the ship. It was just, that was at that moment, that's when I realized that this is why I joined the Navy, not the Army or Marines. It was just amazing.
That sounds amazing. I, you know, can't imagine it. Did you see much other sea life, whales or sharks or anything like that? But of course, you couldn't really look out, right?
Yeah, no. A common thing that I get asked is, are there windows on the submarine? And there aren't.
Yeah, I didn't think there were.
So I can tell you what some of them kind of sound like a little. And of course, we got to see wildlife when we were in port, but we didn't spend a lot of time on the surface.
Okay, so when your stint was up after 4 years, you were a young guy, what were you thinking about doing?
Well, originally, when I got out of the Navy, I wanted to pursue a career in psychology. So I enrolled in college and I got a job working at the local hospital on the psychiatric ward. And I don't know, about maybe 9 months through that, I realized that just wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm. And this was back in Indiana, right?
It was, yeah.
Okay. And so, okay, you crossed that off the list. And then what did you try next?
From there, I bounced around a little bit. I moved to Iowa with my sister for a little bit, managed a shoe store, eventually made my way back to Indiana. I managed a steakhouse, and then that moved me to another city. Eventually, that's where I met my wife, Elena. Not in that town. We actually met online.
Aha. So you were moving around quite a bit, and then you met Elena. So now we're going to get into the love story. But first, I just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm Maryam McNellis. The show's called Our Town, and my guest today is Bill Kraut. He's about to tell me how he met his wife, Elena. He was in Indiana, but she is a Western Washington girl, and he's going to tell us a little bit, first of all, how they met. I think it was online before online was really a thing. So go ahead and tell me the story, Bill.
Lena and I, we were online, and there was kind of a social group. To give you some context, if any of your listeners are, you know, kind of aware of the evolution of the internet, just shortly after the bulletin boards, which were, you know, the very basic part of, you know, how the internet became so connected, there were these group chat rooms. So anyway, Elena and I met there just, you know, as a casual kind of thing. And then a few years later, we started talking a little bit more. And then there were, you know, just as there is now, you have group chat, you have individual chat. So,
so this wasn't, you know, a Speedy Gonzales thing. It was a couple of years.
Sure. Yeah. One of the ironic things is that when we first really started talking more one-on-one, it was a little bit of just like, you know what? I think that both of us have reached the point in our lives where we don't feel like we need to have a partner. Mm-hmm. We don't need to be with someone. We're happy in our own skin. There was a connection that started to develop between her and I, with the irony that we weren't really even looking to connect.
Right. And
so yeah, that relationship just kind of grew from there.
By way of background for our listeners, Elena's father, Joe Lovato, owned Port Hadlock Building Supply. She had worked there at some points in her youth, but wasn't completely active in the place. But at some point, you two decided to take step number two from talking, you know, online. Mm-hmm. Did it progress through telephone conversations first?
It did, yeah. So we started talking on the telephone a little bit more. Elena had a daughter at that point, and she wanted to be protective of her. And so she was hesitant for, you know, her daughter, Jacqueline, and I to communicate too much. I mean, right. Mom wanted to make sure things were stable, and I totally right. respected that. Yeah. Elena shared with me that her daughter had been looking for a puppy, because we had talked at one point about, hey, if we, you know, if I ever come out there, I'll get a place and I'll have a dog. You can come see it, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Jacqueline was also looking at places to live. And I thought, you know what, that's kind of cool. So it just kind of happened that I was at a place where, you know, I'd really like to meet you in person. Mm-hmm. And she agreed. And from what I said earlier, I kind of bounced around a little bit and a little bit impulsive. But at the same time, when something's there and I have the faith that it's going to be there and it's going to work out, then it takes away the fear and mm-hmm. you just do it.
Well, Indiana is not exactly next door to here. No. So how did you come out?
On my way out, my car broke down in a tiny little town. And when I say tiny, I mean it. Buford, Montana, population at that time two. Now it's one because the sun moved away. So here I am, pulling the car dies. I glide through the on-ramp, and there's a little gas station, which is closed because it was like 1 a.m.
Naturally.
Yeah. So I use the payphone and I called Elena. I'm like, I really hate to tell you this, but I'm going to be a little delayed getting there because my car just broke down.
Oh, no.
And so being computer literate and all that stuff, after our phone call, she gets online. She found a tow company to come get the car and take me to the next town over. So it was kind of neat because even the journey here, it was a partnership. I made the leap of faith to come out here, and she made the leap of faith to help get my car. And then I eventually took a plane from Salt Lake, where I had a friend, here to Seattle.
What month of the year was it, by the way?
That was in August.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's good. I was thinking of you out there in Montana in the snow. Had you been to Western Washington before?
No, this was, you know, growing up, my father loved to travel. So by the time that I moved out here, the only states left on my list were Oregon, Washington, Alaska, and Hawaii. Hmm. Well, actually, no, Hawaii, because I did that in the Navy. But
true.
So yeah, just yeah. Oregon, Washington, and Alaska were the three states I hadn't been to yet.
Well, do you remember anything about your first impressions?
Honestly, the smell of the air here is different. Huh. Yeah, it has a more woodsy kind of smell.
Interesting. And so what year was that?
That was in 99.
99, okay. So you move out here. You hadn't lined up a job, had you?
No. Actually, I'd been here for a couple of weeks, and I've got to work. I can't imagine not working. It was driving me insane. Mm-hmm. So Elena's father had a lumberyard, and they needed someone to work out there. And it was an entry-level job. So I mentioned to him, hey, if you want to give me a job, then I'll work out there for you. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of just, if you know, for me, it was a job to have. Uh-huh. And then if something else came along down the line, I'd move on. But,
right.
you know, gosh, 20 years later, here I am.
Well, obviously, you didn't just stay in the lumberyard for too long. Mm-hmm. But what about on the parallel front? I take it, obviously, things went well between you and Elena. Mm-hmm. And you got married at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And today you have a couple of kids. How old are they now?
Well, as I mentioned, Elena had a daughter before right. we married. She's now 30. Mm-hmm. And we have an 18-year-old son and a 16-year-old son.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. So you're working at Hadlock Building Supply. Was Elena working there at that time, or was she a stay-at-home mom?
No, she was a stay-at-home mom for several years. And then 2006 or so, her father and his partner were looking at their exit plan, and we started to talk about buying the business. And then even after we first bought the company, she wasn't really there full-time. Mm-hmm. But you know how it is. Owners, they have to jump in.
So. Yeah, things evolve. Things evolve. Well, the big recession hit everyone. Mm-hmm. And by 2007 and 2008, there were really rough times. A lot of companies went under. How did your company weather the storm?
People have a lot of different ways that they express their connection to the universe. For me, I really believe that God was looking out for us, and it's through His grace that we made it. I really don't think it's because I was smart. And we have such an amazing community. Being the owner of a small business, it's so neat that there literally are people that will drive past other stores to come to ours. And to me, that just feels really good that they want us here.
Yeah. How many employees do you currently have?
Right now, we have 20 to 25.
Yeah. Yeah. Is your business somewhat seasonal? I mean, is it busier in the warm months when people are, you know, remodeling their house and painting?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There is a definite season to our business.
Yeah. Yeah. And when in the spring, what month do you really noticeably usually see the pickup?
Usually March is about when things start to pick up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it depends a little bit on the weather, too.
Absolutely, yeah. And we have I love the gardeners in our community. They are just, they're a unique bunch of folks, and they are just itching to get back into the gardening. And so it's really fun to see them as we start, because we close the garden center down during the winter, and then we start to reopen a little bit. We usually, you know, starts in mid-February, we're starting to get things back put into order. And we will have like a soft opening in early March. But yeah, it's interesting. They're itching to get back into it.
Yeah, so your business, really, the way it's evolved, talk a little bit about that. Who are your customers?
Well, right now, the majority of our customers are our retail customers, people that just like fixing things in their own home or working in the garden, putting in a deck, that sort of thing. We have a small loyal group of contractors that we work with, but primarily it's the do-it-yourself homeowners that are the bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. It does. So it's really a three-pronged thing then. It's gardening, hardware, and lumber. Is that the best way to phrase it?
Then the hardware part of it, there's the painting, electrical. Painting is a really big part of the retail part of things. Electrical, plumbing, tools.
Wow.
Like good stuff. Diversity is really the thing that saved our bacon through the recession.
Yeah. Well, I always like to look around in hardware stores, even though I am not handy in any way, but I like looking at all the little gizmos, wondering what's this for? What am I going to do with that? So at this point, you two are the sole owners of the company, correct?
Correct.
I know you had a few partners along the way, but now you're running it yourselves. And do you have any strategy thoughts, strategic thinking? Are you planning any changes, or are you staying the course?
No, I think pretty much we're just staying the course. The economy has changed. Things are better now. There's more going on in building, but we kind of have our niche here, and we want to just continue to do that, just be the place that people want to come to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, in terms of home remodeling, because I know that's a big part of your business, are there any trends that you've seen? Like, recently I've watched a few of those shows on TV. You know, there's quite a few of them. And, for example, one of the things they keep talking about is hardwood floors. You need hardwood floors. Is that really true?
It's a taste thing. The hardwood floors, from what I understand, actually originated in Europe, where people would be able to put flooring down. And then when they moved from that apartment, they would pull the flooring up with them.
Really?
So it was a click design, easy to put in and easy to take out and take with you.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah, the trends come and go. And definitely one of the things that I don't know necessarily that I've seen as much of it here locally, but I know that a big trend they talk about in building is people are going for smaller houses now.
Hmm.
Less square footage.
Yeah, well, I've seen a couple of these tiny houses around town.
Yeah.
We've got some here. Mm-hmm. And some of them look really tiny. Like, I'm not sure they're too tiny for me. Right. But, you know.
Well, where's the line between ADU and home anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, you go to some of these home conventions, home remodeling conventions. Is there anything that sticks out to you that, aside from the small homes?
At one point, panelization seemed like that was going to be a really big thing, and that's where they construct most of the home in a factory or a controlled environment, and then you would just, the walls would have the wiring and everything built into them, the siding, and then they bring it to a job site and just throw it together. That seemed to be a trend. I don't see so much of that right now. It's interesting to me, though, the different technologies that they're researching. One of them was, basically, it's like Legos. That you would use to, and almost anybody could do that, I suppose, as long as you start with a flat foundation, which is,
you know, so you sort of critical. Piece together the house, yeah, is yeah, what
just
you're
like,
saying?
Yeah, just Legos. You just build them right on, like, building blocks. It was an interesting concept.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll ever pick up or not, but
yeah, no, it I've sounded never heard fun. That. Well, you know, in addition to running the store, I know you and Elaine are very active in the community doing various things. Last year, you were Grand Marshals of the Roadie Parade, correct?
Yeah.
That's great. Are you still involved with Roadie?
Not necessarily Roadie itself, just, mm-hmm. you know, our community. And it was really kind of overwhelming to be, you know, asked to do that. It was, you know, out of all the people in our community, it was humbling that they would even consider us. And
so what other projects have you been involved with?
I try to do as much as we can. We just love giving back to the community. Right now, probably one of the bigger projects that we're working with is a community meal being hosted at the Tri-Area Community Center. That'll be a monthly thing, the third Sunday of every month. And this is the same group of people that we're working with, coordinating this, that do the holiday dinners there. Mm-hmm. And this year, they'll be doing Easter, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. So for those months, there won't be the third Sunday gathering. But yeah, it's just so rewarding being able to be a part of things like that.
One of the guests I had on a few months ago was Anita Schmucker from Offer Security Bank. And I know she's involved, or her bank has been involved in that. Mm-hmm. What other groups have been involved?
Well, another big part of that whole group is Rita Hubbard. And she's with Port Townsend Paper and also the Rotary Club, the Sunrise, I believe it is, mm-hmm. Rotary Club.
Voices for Veterans was one that...
That's another group that's a local group, and what they do, I think their primary mission was to help homeless vets in our community. They do host what they call a stand down, and that's where all veterans are invited to come, and they have different resources that they can connect the veterans with locally.
You know, that's a group I've never heard of before. I mean, I've heard of the VA or the, you know, the Legion, but I've never heard of Voices for Veterans before.
They actually have a website that you can go to, voicesforvets.org. They meet at the Elks Lodge here in Port Townsend.
Okay.
And then they also meet in Forks and Port Angeles. But I don't remember the venues for those two.
Okay. Well, it's something some of our listeners may be interested in.
Sure.
Are there other community events that you guys are involved in that you want to talk about?
Well, one of the other ones, the Hadlock Block Party. In years past, there was a Hadlock Days. And for a variety of reasons, that kind of it waned and it came and went. But anyway, a couple years ago, some other local businesses there in Hadlock, the Valley Tavern, Frino's Pizza, the alcohol plant, Kitsap Credit Union. Anyway, a few of us local business people got together and they're like, hey, we should do something again. And so we kind of got it restarted. We got a parade going. The East Jefferson Rotary does the parade there. We have vendor booths and we're just trying to grow it and, you know, make it more of a community event.
Yeah. Now, the Hadlock Days was something that went on for a long time. And then I guess it's my vague understanding that the Great Recession had a lot to do with canceling of it. But I don't know whether it was directly
I don't really know all the particulars.
So when is it? When's the next one?
That's going to be the first weekend in August. So this year it's August 4th. It's the first Saturday.
Yeah. And well, obviously that's a ways down the road, but are there plans underway already? I mean, do they have a theme or is it just too far in advance to be at that stage?
Actually, we have a meeting next week. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll be strategizing and hopefully, I'm sure that the parade's going to continue and the business participation. And I'm really kind of hoping that we can get some music lined up.
Okay.
Because I think that really adds to an event when there's no music for people to come and listen to.
You know, I want to skip back to something for a minute. I've interviewed a number of small business owners around here, and we've often talked about employees and how difficult it is. Can you give me your perspective? Is it easy to hire people? Is it easy to keep them? Or what do you think?
It has been difficult over the last couple of years to find good employees, and I have to say that we are so blessed to have the staff that we have today. In fact, there are a couple people there that have been there longer than Elena and I. Yeah, they're just, our folks are amazing, and finding new talent, it is challenging. You know, we're a drug-free company, so sometimes that's difficult because the laws have changed here in Washington State. But overall, when you find those good ones. So one of the things as a business owner that has happened is we've had some staff that have, you know, moved on to other positions.
Right.
And a couple of them literally are teary-eyed that they're leaving us. And as much as I'm so glad that they're able to progress into a position that's better pay-wise or benefits or whatever it is, but just the fact that they're emotional leaving us, that makes me think, okay, you know what? I've created a place where people want to be.
Yeah. You know, I always thought when one of my employees moved on, if I could see that the job was clearly a step up for them, mm-hmm. you know, I was all for it because Absolutely. If they could have a better, you know, higher position, more money, more whatever, okay, go for it. And mm-hmm. I'm happy to have helped that person get mm-hmm. that far. But then there were people you were like, huh? what are you doing with your life here? mm-hmm. Oh, well, you're really busy, I'm sure, running your operation there. You're open 7 days a week, aren't you?
We are.
Wow. Yeah. And how much are you personally around?
Comes and goes. For me, I also do the IT stuff at the store.
Ah.
So there are times when I'm there till 2 or 3 in the morning. Not all the time.
Right.
Know, once in a while. And there's a lot of the community involvement that Elaine and I do. And so, yeah, it's really kind of, some weeks it's maybe 8 hours and some weeks it might be 8. It just,
yeah, okay.
You know, I have to say though, that coming back to the people that we have, that we work with, we're able to do that because our management team, they're great. And our employees work well with that management team so that Elaine and I can go do these community events and know that things are taken care of at the store.
Okay. Well, believe it or not, we're almost out of time, but I did want to ask you one question. Aside from the store and some of the community events, what do you guys do for fun? Do you go sailing? Do you, I don't know. Mm. You don't have your own personal submarine, I'm sure.
No. Boy, for fun. That is one of the biggest challenges, I think, for a small business owner is to have a good work-life balance.
Yes.
That's something true. That Elena and I haven't done the best job with. So yeah, actually this year we're kind of refocusing and we've set aside one day a week where we're going to go have a date night.
Good.
And we have a family night. Yeah. So maybe I can answer that question better 6 months or a year from now.
Okay. Well, I think you're heading in the right direction because you need not to be a total workaholic. You know,
sure.
It's necessary sometimes, but not always. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on the show today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Bill Kraut, the owner of Hadlock Building Supply. In addition to thanking Bill, I want to thank the editors and producers behind this show. John McPherson, my partner, is here, but also Alex Henley is editing today as well. And the editors of the show are very important. They smooth out all the bumps and pauses and you knows and grunts and garble talk, and it usually makes me and my guests sound so much better than we are in
That's
real
good.
Life. I also want to thank Program Director Larry Stein, Board Chair Robert Ambrose, and Station Manager Kate Ingram. All three work really hard to make sure KPTZ is an excellent community radio station. I also want to thank you, the listener. KPTZ is a community radio station. That means all of us here at the station are volunteers. We give our time to the community station because we all believe that Jefferson County needs a free local voice. We need your support, listeners. We need your cash donations, but we also need people to help out in all aspects of the station. KPTZ has a number of brilliant DJs, all play great music. We also have some talk shows like this one. This particular show, Our Town, is designed to help you get to know some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We profile some of the unique individuals who make Jefferson County the special place it is. We're signing off for today, but keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.